I've always felt that you seem like you exist somewhat transcendent of that stuff in a place that I think David Foster Wallace was interested in, of like awareness of irony. So much of what you do is flavored by irony, not like that broth you keep making. And but also good there broth. Is a genuine sort of sincerity, like your speech that you gave about cynicism. And I'm interested in your response to and recovery from that very public period where you your that stuff that happened around your NBC show, and then that and then your tour afterwards. What did you learn from that experience, and how did that help you reframe your relationship with what you do for a living and who you are?
You know, it's funny because I went through this very sort of public feud with my employers at the time at NBC. And I mean, I'm just summing up because I'm trying to remember that there's plenty of important things in the world. So I don't assume that everyone knows what we're talking about. But I went through this big feud and left this massive show here in America that I had always thought was like, if you have that show, that is the proof, that is the brass ring, that is the key to having made it. And I think what it did for me was I went through obviously a lot of, you know, depression and self-doubt and all these things, but then it ended up being kind of a crazy gift because I realized that I had mistakenly thought that I existed, in that framework of here's this big show. So if I have that big show, then that's proof that I'm good and that I'm funny. And then I realized with the absence of that, I was forced to realize that what I really like, what really drives me is making things. And so I made this tour and with the help of a lot of other people and went out on the road and did this tour all across the United States. And it was really exhilarating and exhausting. And I really, I think I kind of started to see, I think I have some value aside from whatever show I'm hosting, to put it really simply. I think I have some value here aside from, and since then, I think I've had more of a sense of ballast that, I'm going to make the stuff that I make. And if I'm with this network or that network or with these people, with those people, I'll be somewhere. I mean, if all of society collapses because of this pandemic and we're all living in the woods, I'll be somewhere in the woods, not far from my family, close enough to keep in touch with them every now and then, but I'll be somewhere in the woods making some kind of skit, you know, for to entertain the creatures that have sprung up in the wake of the pandemic, you know. So, and I'll probably be getting the same amount of satisfaction making the radioactive squirrels laugh that I got from whatever show, whether it was the Tonight Show or the Late Night Show or the Conan Show or the podcast, it really comes from the making of the thing. So I'm not saying I enjoyed that experience, far from it, but I wouldn't change anything. I wouldn't change my narrative in any way other than to give myself a slightly different torso. That's about it.
It's clear that when you describe that, Conan, it sounds like how I receive it, and because this is how I experience reality, is that there's a kind of an egoic, self-centered version of myself that is fueled by external stimulants, approval, accolades, and then there is something in me that is connected to essence. And what I find difficult is not putting this essential connection to comedy or to love or to service or whatever it is, put it to work in order to get me more of the stimulant. You know, like it's very difficult not to be overwhelmed. I mean, in fact, I suppose that is the archetype of the journey into fame, is you start off with some gift, you get a load of recognition, then you think it's about the recognition rather than the gift. And the gift, I think, is something that is very, something that can be very beautiful and very pure. And in a sense, I suppose it is, there is an advantage that you were confronted so starkly and in a way publicly by the question, who am I? What's important to me? What are my values?
Yeah, I think, like, I've noticed that one of the things, if I could distill it down to anyone who's listening, this is the constant struggle of being in a world of, you know, whether it's being called famous or semi-famous or quasi-famous, whatever you want to call it, is that you have this experience of, you walk down the street and someone recognizes you and you see their head turn and they recognize you and you get this slight ionic charge, like a tiny little coppery zing of that person saw me and knows me and seems impressed. Then you keep walking and another person passes you and you get the same little tiny zing and you feel like a tiny, tiny, tiny bit of warmth and feeling of yes, I've just gained another little point, a little Pac-Man dot. I just got another one. But then you walk and someone passes you and doesn't recognize you. And you notice that they didn't recognize you. And then you start to wonder why that person didn't recognize you. And you lose two dots. You lose two zings. Maybe you even lose three zings.
Hey, wait a minute. Masked man, wait. God, he didn't wait for thank you.
He never does. He just helps people and never waits for thank you or nothing.
Hey, Masked man, wait a minute. We got a present for you. Masked man. Did you see that? Is that guy believable? Look at him. He took out the garbage. He cleaned up the yard and everything. Did you give him any money? Not a quarter. Hey, Masked Man, wait a minute. We made some bookends. The kids made a party. Masked Man. Again, this guy's a good-natured schmuck, I'm telling you. I don't believe him. He cleaned the garage out, took the ashes up, and he's gone again. What the hell is his story? I don't know. He loves people. Did you give him a taste? I didn't give him a nickel. Hey, Masked Man, wait a minute. The kids are here. Wait a minute, you ass. Is he kidding? Did you see the old lady? She made coffee and cake and he didn't wait. Look, I don't care for myself, you know, but not for the old lady. How come he's a nice guy? He's not a nice guy. If he's a nice guy, how come he leaves bullets all the time? I don't know. Why does he leave bullets? Maybe a Dr. Ehrlich, the magic bullet. No. Syphilis. 606. What's that? He's telling you in a sly, subtle way that the whole world has syphilis. That's why he rides off with his mouth closed. He don't want to be no part of nobody. You think so? That's right. Hey, Pop, you go bring him back. Get him back here right now. Don't you move, you psychotic. Go to Guantanamo. Masked man, what's your story, buddy? You know, Mr. D'Angelo, he's busting mad. His mama made all them hot Italian cakes. You runned off and didn't accept love or nothing. How come you're so snotty? You can't accept even a present from nobody.
Not explain if you get your goddamn hands off me, you barbarians. The reason I never wait for thank you, you see, supposing once I did wait for thank you, and I heard it.
Thank you, Masked man. What's that?
Thank you, Masked man. A nice sound. Thank you, Masked Man. I'll have it again, sir. Let me hear that once again.
Thank you, Masked Man.
Thank you, Masked Man. We're in trouble. Get the Lone Ranger.
In a minute. I'll be with you in a minute. The town is burning now. Look, I helped you people a lot of years. I'm entitled to a few thank you, Masked Mans. And shut up, you're not going to get any help. I'm telling you. Thank you, Masked Man. I'm going to get a thank you, Masked Man book. That's what I'll do. Every time I get a thank you, Masked Man, put it in the book. Now I'm old and I'll tell people, you know, I wasn't always in the shingle business, you know. No, sirree. Look at this book of mine. Thank you, Masked Man. Leo Carrillo, Freeport, Long Island. Warren William, it's been a great life. Yes, sir, I'm going down to the mailbox now. See if my thank you, Masked Man man came today. Who's been fooling with my mail? Someone's fooling with my mail. My son writes me, and someone's fooling with my mail. Leave my mail alone. I just got a little place. I keep my bed neat, and my mail. I don't want anyone fooling my mail. No one fooling your mail. There are no more thank you, Masked Mans. The Messiah returned during the night.
The Messiah? What does this do with me?
Well, you see, men like yourself and Lenny Bruce, you thrive upon the continuance of segregation, violence, and disease. Messiah returns, all is pure, you stand in the bread line.
You mean?
That's right, without polio, soak as a putz.
Well, then, I'll make trouble, goddammit. I must have a thank you mass man. This way, what I don't have, I don't miss. That's why I always ride off.
Goddamn mass man, you sure can talk about it. My damn head hurts me. How the hell you talking about? Leo Carrillo, Freeboard. Look, I work for the city, you understand, buddy? I got a job to do. Now, what the hell now? Let's see here. You accept a present, we'll get the hell out of here. Now, go ahead. Anything you want, take it.
Anything?
Go ahead. Ashtray, dollar, whip, anything you want.
Anything, all right. I know. Give me that Indian over there.
Who's that? Tonto?
Yes, I want Tonto the Indian.
You're gonna get you Tonto. His name ain't Tonto's Tonto, and you can't have Tonto.
You made the deal. That's what I want. Tonto the Indian.
I'm gonna give you a Tonto in a minute, buddy. What the hell do you want Tonto for?
To perform an unnatural act. What? You heard him perform an unnatural act.
The masked man's a fag. The fag man, goddamn. A fag masked man. Oh, lordy, I don't know what to tell you. That's why you wear that mask, got mascara under there, ain't you, damn fag? You're dang queer, ain't you, masked man? I can't believe that, buddy. A masked fag man.
I'm not a fag man. Not a real fag man. I read about how bad the fag men were, and I want to try it now, just once. In fact, I like what they do with fag men. The punishment is quite correct, consistent with a lot of law. They throw them in jail, a lot of men, very clever. Wash them up and get them ready. And I tell you what, give me the horse, too.
What do you want that horse for?
I want it for the act.
Twisted fag, you damn him. The horse is a freak.
And suddenly you're in this war of constantly accounting, how am I doing? And it's taking up every living second of your brain. And that was a little bit when I got immersed in all this. It was very much overnight in 1993, and I had just turned 30. And I was overnight went from nobody knowing me to who is this guy? And being photographed by famous, by Annie Leibovitz, and just one day in April, not that, the next day in April, that in 1993, that. And I started to become aware that I'm constantly hearing this feedback loop in my head of just, and I'm not actually, I can't turn it off. You can't, and it's a complete waste of time. And so the more you, it takes a long time to find your way through that. And I think and then to reestablish yourself as a person. But now I see this culture of people that what Instagram, Facebook, and really the internet has done is distilled that down to its essence, which is how many clicks do I get? How many likes do I get? And so you have all these people that are, they're doing surgeries to themselves. They're contorting themselves. They're showing them. They're photographing themselves naked. They're doing whatever they can to get more clicks, and they're kind of losing their minds. And it can all be done from their homes, so people don't even see what they really look like. And the whole thing becomes this virtual, I don't know, sort of dystopian nightmare of people just trying to get more zings, more clicks, more whatever. And you know that. That person's gonna die, and none of this means anything. All of this is going into the cloud, and then the cloud's gonna drift away. It's completely worthless.
Rows and flows of angel hair and ice cream castles in the air and feather canyons everywhere. Looked at clouds that weep, but now they only block the sun. They rain and snow on everyone. So many things I would have done, but clouds got in my way. I've looked at clouds from both sides now. Thank you. years and feeling proud to say I love you right out loud. Dreams and schemes and circus crowds, I've looked at life that way. But now old friends are acting strange. They shake their heads, they say I've changed. Well, something's lost, but something's gained in living every day. I've looked at life from both sides now, from win and lose, and still somehow it's life's illusions. I recall, I really don't know life at all. I've looked at life from both sides now, from up and down, and still somehow it's life's illusions. I recall, I really don't know life at all.
Yeah, I wish I was an Instagram model, is what I'm saying. I wish I had huge fame on Instagram. I'm trying now to shit on it so that I have like an excuse for not being that. But I would kill to be an incredibly cool influencer and to be going out with any Hadid, if they were age appropriate.
Killing could be a good angle, perhaps a spate of indiscriminate slayings.
Yes, yes, murder.
Photographs of those slayings.
Yes,
it's people.
Has there been an Instagram murderer yet?
Conan. Not yet.
Not yet.
And I said right then, we've got ourselves a number one record. We'll all remember this moment. Hey, that Zing index is a bit unfair, isn't it? The old exchange rate. It's a bit untethered from any kind of Federal Reserve. One Zing for a like, loss of two Zings for someone strolling by. It's a very unfair system.
Yes, no, it is unfair. It's completely insane, but it all comes from self-loathing. It all comes from self-hate or self-criticism. It's like the flip side to narcissism is I hate myself, and that is what it. Look, we all know the feeling of, it's a cliche, but you perform in front of 500 people and 499 are laughing and one isn't, you'll see the one that isn't, and then you will be backstage wondering what the fuck was wrong with that guy. And that is, I think, where you get the, well, wait a minute, that's not fair. One out of 500. So you got one negative zing for 499 positive zings, and you've given the one negative one much more power than it deserves. But that's all of us. All of us are, you could get, 10,000 great reviews online, but this is why I don't go anywhere near this stuff. But and then one person says, I don't know, I think he sucks. And that's what you're going to be thinking about as you drift off to sleep.
I think what you're describing is Zing hyperinflation, which occurred in Germany after the Treaty of Versailles, after the Second World War. So in a sense, we can blame the Allies. Like a big wheelbarrow full of zings. And what'd you get? A loaf of bread. It's probably not even that nice. Certainly not sourdough.
No, it's a well-known historic fact that after World War One resolved, that the Allies imposed too harsh a penalty on Germany. And it led to the collapse of their currency, the zings. And that later, that resentment of Zing loss later on and Zing hyperinflation led to World War II. So this is all leading to another cataclysm if we're not careful.
One plucky little guy saw an opportunity there in that absence of Zings and thought, I can really start corralling the Zings if I can get costume right.
Did you just describe Adolf Hitler as a plucky little guy? That is. I watch a lot of history documentaries. I read a lot about the Second World War. Never, ever have I heard anyone describe Adolf Hitler, arguably in the running with Stalin as one of the worst despots of any century, as a plucky little guy.
It's very easy to focus on the negative.
So let me get this straight then. What would Stalin be if Adolf Hitler is a plucky little guy? What is Stalin? Is he a kindly old man with a little bit of a hitch in his step? What would you say?
I think he's an adorable old uncle. A broom snouted living cuddle.
I would love to hear your history of the 20th century with everyone described as Mao, a little twinkle in his Mao, and
a sympathetic look at dictators, I would like to make.
Yeah, no, but you're right. You're right. Hitler, if you think about it, if you really want to get, he capitalized on people's anger over negative zings and tried to hyperinflate positive zings. And this analysis will end up, I'll go to prison, I think, probably ultimately for this analysis.
Sooner or later, yes. So, like, I mean, the sign wrap up was held aloft, I think, somewhat in a response of our repositioning of Adolf Hitler as a plucky little guy rather than, you know, one of history's great monsters.
Well, what we're just seeing is the other side of the coin. That's all. And I know that there'll be letters written because I think it's 1925.
That's
right. I know that disapproving letters will be written and put in the post, I think, as you like to say, Russell.
Yes, yes. That's one of our idioms. They're all our idioms.
do you like to take a lift? Do you get on the lift or you get on an elevator? What do you like to do?
I get on the lift.
Do you go to the bathroom or do you go to the loo?
I go to the lavvy. I say, sir, I want to go to the lavvy or the water closet. If someone says, do you mean the bathroom? I roll my eyes and just pass a stool there and then in my trousers. Don't be so horribly euphemistic. Now you're going to have to deal with a smear on your linoleum.
I was in London about 7 years ago, and someone booked me a reservation at a place called Chiltern Firehouse. Mm. And I didn't know anything, but apparently that's where people go to get their picture taken. And so I'm at Chiltern Firehouse meeting, I think, an executive at Turner who had booked the reservation. And we have our dinner, and I walk out, and there's about 70 paparazzi there, you know, sort of London paparazzi.
It's 5 after 5 alive on this day in Fun Fun Town that's going by way too fast. But on the fives, we got Danny Vanilla, the celebrity stalker. He's on the move again. Hey, Danny, it sounds kind of wet there.
It is, Bebop. Partially submerged in the celebrity storm drain behind Wolfgang Buck's Tony Eatery, I can eyeball Princess Goddess inside, attending a brunch, of course, with Prince Harry. Now, right above me is a stretch dumpster, ready to speed Princess Goddess to the white tie and black ribbon affair at Dead Center Hall. There, a replica of the solid platinum cord the doctors pulled out of her back, making it possible for her to speak again, will be auctioned off, along with Rose Mud, the mud board she was riding at the time of her final encounter with a landmine on the slopes of the English Alps. Here she comes. Here she comes.
Hold my string. Come and see my very fast fiddle.
Oh, she's so exquisite.
Point the dibble with Fergie.
And here come the celebrities taking pictures of themselves. And there's Tony Eatery with his latest wet girl storm drain. And there goes the stretch dumpster. Bridget Scott, she's rolling down her window. She's digitally winking at me.
I love you, Denny.
What did she say?
And one of them took a picture of me, so suddenly all the lenses came up, and 75 lenses, flash bulbs started flashing, you know, like that footage you see of Princess Diana, you know, not long before she died, just anywhere she went, just flash. And I had that split second of being a famous person in London, and then started to turn to walk up towards, to find a cab up the street, and all the flashes stopped. And I realized, and one guy in the crowd in a thick accent said, "Hey, who are you?" And I realized in that second that one guy out of 75 said, he looks like someone, he looks like some Belgian actress.
The interesting thing is that with the spreading of media culture, you can become a Kurt Cobain, you can become a media star with a much smaller niche. Yeah. You can actually make you can make money in the music business today, not like when the fire sign was raging back in 68 and 69, as a semi-sub industrial pop group, as a, you know, as a non-conforming short hair reggae group.
Oh yeah, but it doesn't make any difference because it's so fleeting. I got my message in this when I was in New York. And I was on the Conan O'Brien show for my book tour, and I had to do a reading downtown. So NBC provided a limo to take me downtown, and there was a little group of people out there waiting for a celebrity because they saw a limo outside of NBC. So I got out, and this woman asked me if I would pose for a picture with her. So I put my arm around her because a camera gives you permission to do that to a stranger.
And that's true.
This guy comes walking along, and he sees me having my picture taken with this woman in front of NBC and a limo. So he asks her for her autograph, and I'm going away in my limo watching him because she's signing it.
Marge Briscoe, my first, thank you very much.
And so it has nothing to do with reality. It's all somebody's idea of what your image might be.